This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we talk with a NASA glaciologist who, in his retirement to eastern Jefferson County, has decided to dedicate himself to taming Bigfoot, by which he does not mean Sasquatch, but the county's carbon footprint. So now, let's go inside the Compass. For 30 years, Bob Binchadler worked as a glaciologist for the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, where, based on his work observing the receding of glaciers and global ice sheets, he became one of the first scientists to sound the alarm about global warming. With fellow NASA scientist Jim Hansen, he brought his findings to Congress in the late 1980s. More recently, he served as a key advisor to former Vice President Al Gore on the seminal climate change film An Inconvenient Truth. Binchadler retired from NASA in 2012 and moved from his home of many years near Washington, D.C. to Quilcene. But though he may be retired, he has not stopped working on the cause that became the central focus of his career. As he explained in a recent interview, the research phase of his life may be over, but the job of disseminating his findings has taken on a new urgency, which is why he has joined Local 2020's Climate Action Outreach Group and helped devise a carbon footprint lowering contest for Jefferson County residents titled Taming Bigfoot. So now you moved to Port Townsend, or to Quilcene, I guess, 3 years ago, and now you are deeply involved with the Climate Action Group here. How did that come about?
Well, I became a glaciologist by being trained as a graduate student at the University of Washington. A wonderful school, had a wonderful mentor, and learned about glaciology. And I was always fascinated with the mountains, and especially the mountains with snow and ice on them. So that's what drew me to that field. And I was more concerned about glaciers as glaciers and how they moved and how fast they moved and why they moved as rapidly or as slowly as they did in some cases. And then I was hired on at NASA because they wanted scientists who understood polar regions and could help translate satellite data into sort of more typical data that glaciologists might collect when they were working on the surface of a glacier or an ice sheet. So that's what I did for 30 years. And as this whole issue of climate change and global warming emerged and so many changes were happening in the polar regions, I was drawn into that whole aspect of Earth science, this great concern about climate change on worldwide. There's a huge consensus within the scientific community that humans are causing climate change, that we're the primary driver of it now. I think uncertainty and emphasizing uncertainty has been the mistake that climate scientists have made again and again and again. When we talk to each other, scientist to scientist, you know, we don't waste our time talking about what we know. We spend our time talking about sort of the edge, the frontier, where the uncertainty is, and trying to reduce uncertainty. So it's very easy to get us in conversations about uncertainty. And so in that sense, we're kind of our own worst enemy in being able to effectively communicate to the public, which is where you need to emphasize what you know you do know. Being a civil servant scientist, my salary comes from public tax dollars, and I need to serve the public. And so that's something I still do, even in retirement. Even though I don't do the research any longer, I think I can be an effective interpreter of the science and helping people understand what the science is saying. So the research took me to Antarctica many, many times, trying to corroborate satellite data with data that we could collect on the surface. So I had the opportunity to work on the surface in Antarctica through a number of field expeditions that I led. But I was getting older. I was getting ready to retire. And I learned that sort of through my combination of public education and outreach, we call it, that was very, very rewarding and satisfying. And I felt very important being a civil service scientist. And the message was very important because of the issue of global warming and people needing to appreciate what impact human activities were having on accelerating climate change and the human consequences of that. But in retirement, I learned that I couldn't keep doing the research just because it's a full-time job. It's a 24/7. You're always thinking about the research. And I couldn't be retired and do the research, but I could still be retired and do the outreach. So I continued to do the outreach. Unfortunately, most scientists are not rewarded for doing public outreach. They're rewarded for writing peer-reviewed scientific papers and giving their lectures to their colleagues. So many of them don't do that, don't do the public outreach, which I feel is so very important. But I can do that in retirement. I have the credibility to do it, and I get satisfaction from educating the public and helping them understand the science. So I can do that from Quilcene, and so I do that. Through my years of working in the D.C. area and giving lots of testimony to congressional committees and the like, I feel like this real solution to climate change and our response to it and our adaptation to it is not going to come from the top down. I don't have great hopes for U.S. government at the highest levels, be it the administration or the legislative branch, really making the hard choices that they need to make. I think it's going to be grassroots. I think it's going to be bottom up. So I think it's very, very important to educate the public, because ultimately they have control of what happens in the country just through their own behaviors. So that's, I think, a very critical message to help people understand the importance of their own decisions, the importance that they find their voice as citizens, and that they express that voice in a way that comes from being well-informed. So I'm sort of on that make sure they're well-informed side of this whole issue. So the outreach to me is critical. And I've found in this area of the Olympic Peninsula, actually a very receptive audience. I found the Local 2020 Climate Action Outreach Group, and I've linked up with them because I thought they had the best opportunity to broadcast this message. And I've given lectures on the climate science. We've had other people on the group, Laura Tucker, give a lecture on reasons for hope, because I can often layer on the doom and gloom, although that's not really the message I want to project. It's more awareness. But lots of people are already accepting the fact of climate change and human triggers and driving of that. And they're asking, what can we do? And is anything that we can do going to have an impact? And the answer to the latter question certainly is yes. There's a lot you can do that will have an impact. Everything you do has an impact, whether it's good or bad. But we want them to be better informed about what the impact is of their various behaviors. And so the outreach group is all about this education. And so that's how we came around to this competition, this Taming Bigfoot competition. We felt that it wasn't the time for lecturing the public about climate science and lecturing them about reasons for hope. We kind of said, okay, we did that. We hear this question, what can we do? So we thought about what activity we could organize that would be educational in that regard. So we came up with this idea of Taming Bigfoot. That's just a sort of an attractive name. But what it really is about, it's a carbon footprint reduction competition. It's supposed to be fun. We have teams of 8 people competing against each other to try to reduce their carbon footprint the most. And then we've had sponsoring businesses that have donated prizes, and we'll award those to the teams that are most successful in reducing their carbon footprint the most. And Bigfoot is a nice Northwest theme, so and we're trying to tame our big carbon footprint.
Now, how do these teams form themselves?
Each team is 8 people, and it needs to represent the diversity of the county. So each team has to have somebody from a 1 or 2-person household, somebody from a 4 or more-person household. There has to be somebody who lives inside the Port Townsend, somebody who lives outside Port Townsend, somebody who's younger than 30, a prominent citizen. We're thinking of city council people or county commissioners. We've briefed both of them. They're all excited about this competition. So the teams are composed in somewhat an equitable and standard way. And then it's a three-month competition that will start in mid-January and end on Earth Day. The first month, people will just be recording their sort of standard behavior, what they do, how much gasoline they buy, how many kilowatt hours of electricity they use at home, how much propane they burn, how much wood they burn, what trips they take carpooling, what they take by public bus. Just live your life, but just record sort of what you're doing. We have simple data sheets that help them record this. And then that's put into something called a carbon footprint calculator. We've created a calculator specific to Jefferson County. We use conversion factors that will convert how many kilowatt hours of electricity PUD supplies to how many pounds of carbon dioxide are emitted into the atmosphere associated with the production and delivery.
Now, isn't virtually all of the electricity the PUD supplies coming from hydro sources? Does that have much carbon footprint?
Yeah, so I think if you go to these general carbon calculators on the web, you'll find that electricity has a fairly large carbon footprint. In Jefferson County, it does not, because PUD actually generates most of their electricity from hydroelectric and nuclear. So it does have a low carbon footprint. But getting back to this whole educational aspect of this, we want people to understand that and be able to look at actual numbers of how many pounds of carbon dioxide 100 kilowatt hours produces relative to, say, 5 gallons of gasoline. So because people will have many possible decisions to make when they want to reduce their carbon footprint. But I think right now people don't have the information from which to make decisions of what the impact of driving less or taking the public bus or using less water or using electricity, what's the relative impact and benefit sort of in terms of reduction in carbon greenhouse gases. The carbon calculator will give them those numbers.
So, but just to back up a little bit, so these teams, I mean, are going to be composed of all of these different components, somebody who's well known. But how are those people expected to find one another? I mean, do they have to know each other in advance, or are you going to somehow like put them together when people sign up individually on the website? I mean, how's that going to work?
Well, we're inviting people to apply in two different ways. If people want to organize their own teams and find the people with these characteristics and apply as a complete team, that's great. Less work for us to do. That's one option. Or they can apply as an incomplete team. They can find a few people that want to play together, but they may be missing one or two of the critical characteristics or players. So they can apply as an incomplete team, or they can just apply as an individual. I just received an application the other day from somebody on city council who wants to participate, but hasn't put together a team. And then we'll do the matchmaking. We'll fill out the incomplete teams with these individuals. So applications allow people to identify in any of those three categories.
I see. Now, I guess people can't get credit for past actions, though. I mean, like we, for example, have put a solar array already and have a passive solar thermal for our water heating. So those obviously would have helped us a lot if we did that while the contest was underway.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you find lots of residents at different stages of sort of getting greener. And so we've tried to allow for that, both by insisting that each team have somebody who's already quite green and somebody who's not very green yet at all. But we're also scoring teams based on not just their absolute reduction in carbon footprint, but also a fractional decrease reduction in carbon footprint. So we're trying to be as inclusive as we can and make allowances for different people being at these different stages. And so everybody can play, and we we try to distribute the prizes so that everybody feels like they gained not only information but some reward for their participation in this. And we hope that through their experiences, they'll share those experiences with people, their neighbors, friends who didn't participate, and further extend sort of the message and the experience of the variety of ways that people can reduce their carbon footprint and what works, what's most effective and what isn't as effective based on our region, our county-specific carbon calculator.
So tell me again how long this contest is going to go on.
So the applications are open right now. They're going to close December 15th, and then we'll formulate the teams and announce those teams that are selected to participate. And then the competition begins with a kickoff meeting in mid-January. We're looking at January 11th. And so for the first month, from starting in January, they'll just record their behavior, and we'll get a month of baseline information as to what their carbon footprint is. And then for the next 2 months leading up to Earth Day, which is when we have our big final awards presentation announcing the winners, they'll have 2 months to try to reduce their carbon footprint as much as possible on a team basis. So they have to encourage their other teammates to reduce, sort of continue their greener behavior. And share those experiences with other teams. We'll have sort of a meeting every month to sort of see how things are going. And we'll put the results up on the web so people can see how other teams are progressing and sort of keep the competitive juices flowing through that whole three-month period. So by Earth Day, we'll announce the winners and give out the prizes, and the competition will be over, but hopefully the education will just be starting.
I see. Now, in terms of developing strategies for lowering the carbon footprint, is there advice available on the website? Or are you going to be giving presentations, or is it really up to the teams to figure it out for themselves?
Yeah, we're leaving it up to the teams to figure it out themselves. We think that's the real creative aspect of the competition, and one of the fun aspects, and one of the educational aspects that people may see other team, people on one team may see people on another team making more progress in, say, the transportation sector. And they're going to have to figure out maybe what that team is doing in order to lower their transportation sector footprint as much as they are. Maybe they're carpooling amongst themselves. Maybe they're taking advantage of public transportation more. Maybe they're just Skyping more than driving over to somebody's house to have a conversation, whatever. But we want the different teams to come up with their own strategies, and at the end of the competition, share those strategies. So again, we really all learn from everybody's individual experiences.
And how are those strategies and results going to be communicated to the public?
Well, we're encouraging the correspondents for the leader and the PDN to come to the meetings that we have every month and sort of gather together, identify the personal stories that I think would make for interesting reading for the audience out there in the county. So it's through that kind of media coverage, basically. And if we come up with some of our own stories that we want to put on our website, we'll do that. But we're relying primarily on radio and print media.
And what is that website?
The website is www.local2020.org/climate-action/Bigfoot. Whatever results we have, we'll be posting on the website. So about every month, there will be updates to first the baseline footprints of the different teams, and then the first month's reduction sort of progress, and then the final results of reductions. We won't put individual people's footprints up. We're keeping it just on a team basis. So everybody's individual actions remain private, and we think that's important. But team by team, we'll be sharing those.
So now this contest is really only available for individuals. No commercial entities will be part of any of the teams, right?
The commercial businesses can't participate, although they're endorsing. We've had a number of endorsements, and they're sponsoring. So we've had actually excellent response from the business community and the industrial community in providing sponsorships, which comes with a donated prize that then we award. So if you go to the website, you'll see the wide variety of prizes. We have a case of wine, we have yards of compost, we have composters, we have free bike tune-ups, we have books, we have gift certificates, we have a year's free coffee. So actually the prizes are phenomenally generous, but and PUD probably is going to be providing LED bulbs to everybody. Everybody's going to walk away with something. So we're getting a good buy-in from the business and industrial community.
So, and what's the first prize?
We haven't put the first prize together yet. We're going to have prize packages for the teams, because there are eight people. We're gonna cherry pick some of the very best donated prizes and package them together as a team prize, both for the team that reduces their carbon footprint the most in absolute terms, and the team that reduces their carbon footprint the most in fractional terms. And then there'll be a variety of other prizes, probably in individual sectors. And we're having fun just contemplating the various ways we can structure all the prizes. So we want to make it fun for everybody.
I've been reading Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything, and she talks about this too, about the sort of disturbing development that it seems like in polls, fewer and fewer people are concerned about climate change. And she speculates that one of the reasons for that is that, individuals are being asked to do a lot about it when actually some of the biggest polluters and so on seem to be getting a free car. So I'm wondering what the Climate Action Group, how you've been working with the paper mill, which is by far and away both the biggest consumer of water resources in the county and also the biggest carbon polluter by several times.
Yeah, a very important message we're trying to communicate through Taming Bigfoot is that we're all in this together. There are some larger players, there are some smaller players, and that I think by asking and getting positive responses from the various county industries, if you will, the paper mill, we're talking to them about donating prizes. They are supportive of the competition. PUD, Jefferson Transit, are providing some prizes. That we're all in this together, and I think we want to generate a sense of this community, both individual residents as well as industries within the community, need to pull in the same direction. The county does have a stated goal of an 80% reduction in carbon greenhouse gas emissions from 1990 levels by the year 2050. And it's not appropriate, I think, for individual citizens just to point to the paper mill and say it's their responsibility for the county to meet that. I think it's everybody's responsibility. And I think we will find that individual residents, as they group themselves together, can have a larger and larger impact. So the fact that we're not adversaries but partners in this across the full spectrum is an important message of the competition. And
but then at the same time, and if you just do the math, if you want to get to that 80% goal, a fair chunk of that just of necessity has to be from the paper mill. Because of their very large percent. I mean, I think that they may be using 80% of.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true that the paper mill is a big driver, huge numbers. But what I tell citizens when I give my climate change talks, when they ask, what can I do? I think there are two major areas of activity for every citizen to contemplate. The first is just their own individual behavior. And certainly we're trying to highlight that and quantify the effects of changes in behavior, changes in lifestyle vis-a-vis greenhouse gas emissions. The second is you're a citizen in a democracy and you have incredible power if you so choose to exercise it. And so becoming informed and speaking to your representatives through that in from an informed base is incredibly powerful. I've spent a lot of time talking to politicians in my days in the D.C. area, and they say that regardless of how compelling my presentation might have been to them, until they hear it from their constituents, they're not going to take any action. So I think politicians, be they liberal or conservative, anywhere on that spectrum, do listen to their constituents. But the constituents have to find their voice. And I think the message I got from reading Naomi Klein's book is that lobbyists have incredible influence, but partly allowed by the lack of voice, loud voice, coming from the citizenry. So I think when it comes to industrial behavior in the county, as well as just county policy, citizens have more power than they realize. But I think their power will be amplified the better informed they are. So that just comes right back to the mandate we hold within the Climate Action Outreach Group. Get that information out there. We try very carefully not to take particular policy stands, but to get the information in the hands of the citizens and have them express what they feel is the appropriate action that should be taken by their representatives, and through their behaviors, their influence on the industries that are in the county. So that's where the power lies in a democracy, if we choose to hold it and exercise it that way.
Well, thank you very much. We've just about run out of time here. So once more, in order to sign up for the Taming Bigfoot, you need to go to the website, which is rather long and complicated, but would it work to simply search for something like Taming Bigfoot, Jefferson County, or Local 2020?
If you go to the Local 2020 website, you can find your way to Bigfoot. It's through the Climate Action Committee. That works better than Taming Bigfoot. I Googled on Taming Bigfoot last night and didn't get the result that I wanted. I didn't try adding Jefferson County, but the more sure way is to go to Local 2020, then the Climate Action, and you'll find your way to Bigfoot.
With retired NASA glaciologist Bob Binchadler, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. KPTZ Compass is dedicated to going into the community to bring the stories from the community to the attention of the rest of the community. If you're a community-minded person and consider yourself something of a storyteller besides, perhaps you'd like to join us. We stand ready to train promising people in the subtle arts of radio journalism. If you think this might be the right kind of creative work for you, please stop by the station at the Mountain View Commons to talk with us and fill out a volunteer application. And remember, if you have a news tip or story idea of any kind, send an email to news@kptz.org. That email again for news tips is news@kptz.org. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.